But we are recording.
Hooray!
Might as well roll an intro.
Start the game already!
Well, you're drinking something different. I see a can.
It is Abbott. Rich and malty premium ale. It's got a little tagline, four times to savor. I have no idea how it is. I sent Cindy to the beer store. So I got back random stuff. You look like you've got some hard stuff. I'm a little worried about the
It's actually not. Well, it could be. We'll see how much of it I partake in. I only had like one thing cold left in a can, and it was like a gin and tangerine something or other. I just wasn't feeling it. So shout out to my mom, but she gave me a whole bag full of miscellaneous liqueurs and stuff for Christmas. And this is 40 Creek Butter Tart creme liqueur. It's not chilled, but I was looking at it, and it's like you can have it neat. You can have it on the rocks. You don't need to mix it with anything. So that's what we're going to try. It's 15%, so it's not, you know, not too strong, but if I have enough of it.
Nerding under slightly more influence than usual.
It's a weird color. I mean, it's a creme liqueur, so it's going to be a weird color, but.
It's booze. Oh, that is a weird color. It looks like a white Russian.
Yeah. I'm a black Russian drinker. I don't usually do the milky stuff, but it smells nice.
Tastes like a butter tart.
Ooh, that could be dangerous.
I would just like to, because we're not releasing video with these anymore, so I would just like to let everyone at home know that the first sip, his pants fell off.
Haha, joke's on you. I wasn't wearing pants to begin with.
Man, that's some body hair.
Have you been, man?
Generally pretty good. I'm working an absolute ton recently. I mean, I got two weeks full of like week and a half worth of hours in the last 2 weeks, and I got one more of those to go, I think, before I'm done with this. So I'm tired. So I'm likely to get very silly.
Nice.
Huzzah.
Been a long week here too. We're getting ready for going the switch to full remote. In addition to the regular work, a lot of just preparation, and like we've always been pretty loose in how we operate. There's some things that we need to tighten up. Even something as simple as like how we're handling files and stuff, moving them back and forth, cloud storage versus local storage versus making it easy for like the technical and non-technical staff.
You not have some kind of like Git or Vault or...
For the web builds, we run version control in platforms called Beanstalk. It's basically Git, but it has its own standalone deployment functionality, which is nice because we can deploy without using Git, like just everything from old school FTP to SFTP over SSH with keys and miscellaneous shit. I can deploy directly to Shopify. I can do all sorts of that without actually having to have full control of the destination environment, which is super handy. But, you know, like design files and miscellaneous just shit, right? Like
memos and office stuff. Yeah.
Coming from like the shop originally was more of an ad agency than it was a digital agency. We've pivoted over the years. So we're coming from primarily the Mac world. So a lot of that shit has persisted where people are just working in like Pages and Numbers and stuff like that. So we're going to be moving a certain amount of it to Google Workspaces and dealing with Google Drive for storage. Honestly, cost-wise, it worked out better than the Dropbox that I'd been using once you started scaling up with Teams. We were getting all of the extra Google features in addition to the storage for less money than it was going to cost for just storage plan with Dropbox.
That's pretty good.
But that, you know, setting all that up is a lot of extra preparation, and then getting everybody else up to speed and writing documents for how to use it and trying to set up standards and get the basic organization and structure in place for all of that. So,
oh, you're a manager now.
Well, I am, in addition to being the lead developer who spends most of my week buried in the code. I am the IT guy. I am the management of all of our infrastructure. I am all of that shit.
You are the company.
Yeah, maybe that's probably stretching it a little bit, but sometimes it feels like it. But when we're making a significant transition, like shutting down our office to go full remote, and it's going to change the way all of our staff do things, even those not specifically in my purview or silo, it's a lot of extra work thrown at me, a lot of extra just headspace even. Like, even if I'm not putting in, you know, 70 hours a week, the noodle's always working on the problems and solving them. And
oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. So I might have a few too many of these before we're done.
Well, excellent. Good. Because I actually brought a second can that I'm not going to share unless we do a second part here. So I have to interject a very selfish question about your office reorganization, which affects me like almost zero. And my question is this: what are we going to do about LAN parties now?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've almost given up on physical LAN parties. I would like to try one eventually. Like, I did that one on my 40th birthday and it was a blast. Mm-hmm. But even then, it was getting enough people there that all wanted to do the same thing at the same time.
And oh, man.
It was bad enough for you guys up there. Like, it was a great spot, but that stairwell in the back.
Yeah.
What did we do? We did the better part of probably 20 hours, which is mild for one of our LAN parties compared to what we used to do. But
yeah, but we're old now.
But we're old now. And getting that equipment up for you guys. And then, like, you and I went to breakfast with Joe. And then we came back. We packed up your stuff. I saw you off. And then I spent 3 hours packing up tables and equipment and taking it all home. And
yeah, it's a lot of work.
Maybe I'll do it for my 50th. So we got a few years. We'll rent a space for it or something. Something with no street. You know what we should do? We should go back to that place that we did that one.
Oh, my God. Is that building still standing?
It is. I'm not sure if it's the same thing or not. Like, I think it was an old train station way back in the day. And then it was like a seniors community center or something.
Yeah, it was like a Lions Club hall or an Elks or something. See if we can get those two kids from Toronto to come back because they'd be old now, too.
Yep.
It was so funny. They showed up with all of this stuff and they're like, I'm going to sell all my gear to the people at this LAN party. And it's like, you're the only ones here and you're not even involved.
Yeah. To make you feel old, that was 2006.
I know. I had hair then, almost.
Not much more.
Oh, not much more. No, I still had illusions that I had hair back then, though. Or that I could have. Like, this is fixable, I thought, back in those days. Now it's, I'm just bald.
Before we get into main topics, I do have a couple of questions for you, because I know this is something we talked about before.
Okay, shoot.
Now that I'm going to be working remote full-time, I want to actually tweak my office setup. So I have my main rig here, PC rig that I use for recording this. I run all my D&D stuff on. It's not my gaming rig, which is downstairs, but it's sort of a decent spec production rig. Uh-huh. But when I work at the same desk, I literally drop my MacBook down over here. I do have a second HDMI cable going to the monitor, but I'm pushing my keyboard and mouse aside and plopping the stuff that I use for work down there. I want to go to a proper KVM setup or something. I'm going to get a keyboard that works well in both PC and Mac layouts without having to tie my hands in a knot with key remapping and stuff. Uh-huh. I know you dealt with some of this when you moved into your house, and I also know you were dealing with some of it just with your quest to deal with multiboxing in EverQuest.
I never multiboxed in EverQuest. That would have been against the rules.
Sorry. Being logged into multiple computers at the same time in a way that you could plausibly deny that you were playing two characters simultaneously.
Well, two was actually allowed, but yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on.
What did you end up doing? I know you were experimenting with a few things then.
Okay, so I looked at KVMs, and for gaming at least, running through a KVM, unless you spend a whole bunch of money, is a really bad idea. Mm-hmm. I even got rid of the dock for my work laptop, honestly, because they're all limited to 60 hertz, which eventually gives me headaches. Mm-hmm. again, unless you spend a whole bunch of money. So I experimented with a couple of things where I have, like, my main monitor has, I think, 4 inputs on it. So I just basically, like, my main PC goes into one and the work computer goes into another one. I do have a keyboard switch, which is just a USB switch. And I bought a cheap one from Amazon.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what I would need. You know, so the predicament of the setup, my monitor has multiple inputs, so that would be fine, mm-hmm. mostly, except that I kind of want to do the USB switch part of it for my keyboard. First of all, I'm looking at going wired.
Yes.
I don't understand. This should have been in something we recorded yesterday, because it's kind of a gripe of mine. The drive for wireless in environments that, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's on your desk. It doesn't move. Your desk is a mess. It's your home shit, right? And I say this as a bit of a hypocrite, because, like, my work setup, I'm using, you know, an Apple Magic Mouse. I have specific reasons for that, and it's actually part of my problem. I do have a wireless Apple keyboard that's a shitty Chiclet keyboard, but I'm so accustomed to it. About TKL in size, slightly different. I want to go to like, a mechanical TKL that I can switch modes on, but I'll just go wired. I don't have to replace batteries and that shit. They don't even recharge. Like, both of those eat AA is what I have. I don't think I'm going to share a mouse. Part of my dilemma is this particular mouse has become such an integral part of my development process. It's silly to think about it, but I'm sure you would get it if you were using it. So much of my workflow is scrolling sideways like this. Because it's basically a touchpad on top of the mouse.
Uh-huh.
So my code is structured in a way where I'm not constantly breaking lines down. Like, you know, my lines are set up so that I've got easy folding, right? I want to be able to fold code and block it out easily. So I'm not worried about scrolling side to side, because I can just use the momentum-based scrolling on that and wee. But I hate that mouse for literally anything else.
What's the receiver on it look like?
They're just Bluetooth, those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So in theory, then, you could leave the mouse Bluetooth connected to the Apple and just switch the... So what I've got is basically just like a 4-port USB switch. Because you say you have a Magic Mouse. I don't know if I can get it up to the camera, because I have... I'm going to move the camera. Hang on. So I have this guy, which is like a 3D mouse, which I use... I find myself reaching for it when I'm gaming. It's like, oh, I just want to, like, rotate around. It's like, oh, yeah, that doesn't work on this computer. So I have 4 USB devices that I switch basically between computers, and it's like digital button. Boop, done. It's not fast.
Where it gets dicey with the MacBook Airs and most of the modern MacBook stuff, there's 2 USB-C ports, and power delivery is done through a USB-C port. But there's also no external HDMI or mini display port or anything on it. So I'm using a dongle right now to convert USB-C, grab HDMI out of it to go to my one external display. So I need one of two things to happen. A USB switch would be great, because really it is mostly USB devices. I'm going to have my keyboard, camera, microphone, things like that, that I just want to easily be able to go click. And now I'm in work mode. I'm having Zoom meetings. I'm doing all of that shit. Click. Now I'm back here. I'm recording podcasts. I'm doing that shit. But I either have to have a USB hub that does power delivery back to the Mac, because the hub's already going to take up one USB port.
And you need the other one for power as well.
Or I need the hub to allow all the video shit, but work reasonably intelligently so that it's not trying to do that when I've switched to the PC. Mm-hmm. Because I'd essentially have to have, you know, unless the hub had built in HDMI shit anyway. So anyway, that's part of my next month or so, as I'm working permanently from home, figuring out some of the shit that I just haven't bothered with, right? Like, we were working pretty much every day at the office until the pandemic shut down for a few months at a time during the pandemic. And then it's just been kind of a half and half situation. So it's never been worth, let me make this workspace comfortable, because I've always had the escape of, you know what, I'll just go to the office.
Right. Here's the thing. I don't know a whole lot about Mac and how it works, but just sort of thinking of that logically, it sounds like you actually need 2 different setups. Or you need a dock that is specific for the MacBook and you need to switch to that. Mm-hmm. So like you'd have a dock that has like standard USB inputs and you'd like plug your keyboard and mouse and microphone and camera into that. You know, and then you'd switch back and forth between connecting to the dock, which connects to the MacBook, and connecting through the switch to the PC.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you need two separate devices to switch.
We'll see how it goes. I'll figure something out. I was just curious what sort of things you'd run into in your experimentations there.
I mean, my experimentations were to go, oh, KVM, I've heard of those. I'll go see how those work. Oh, 60 hertz. I've kind of gotten used to 165 hertz, which is really nice. So 60 hertz looks like ass now. Mm-hmm. Which I never thought would be the case. Like I still have the first two flat panel monitors that I, you know, when I was getting really serious, quote unquote, and both of them are like 60 hertz max, you know, and they were fine at the time. But now it's like, I don't want to go back to that.
So is it about 60 hertz being hard on the eyes for you? Yeah. Or is it about the smoothness and latency?
Smoothness and latency, I can't actually see a difference, but it does actually, I find my eyes get tired much faster with a 60 hertz display. And it might just be like, I haven't unpacked those monitors in a really long time. They might be fine at 60 hertz. I just find that like this particular display with the stuff I'm doing, which is mostly like 3D CAD, my eyes start burning. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. See, I always struggled with 60 hertz on CRTs, but I never really struggled with it on LCDs for that, you know, just because like the light in the back is generally always on anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to suffer from whatever 60 hertz power issues, but you know, your frame rate or your refresh rate at that point is more the switching of the actual panel itself. So for me, it was always just about, is it smeary or not. Like looking at a CRT at 60 hertz, it was like, this is headache inducing. And I don't mean like over a period of 3 hours. I mean a period of 20 seconds.
Yeah. For me on the LCDs, it's, or on this monitor anyway, it is over like, you know, 6 or 8 hours, like a work day. Yeah. You know, I've found an improvement over the course of a work day. I have a nerdy thing that I want to bring up.
Okay.
Because we switched to Foundry, what, 2 sessions ago, like 4 weeks ago now. And I was, you know, trying to figure out like all kinds of plugins and things. And there was, I downloaded 5e tools just so I could reference material that I have previously purchased in like 3 or 4 different formats. And I thought, you know what, I would like to have this locally so that I can reference it locally as opposed to, all right, I got to go to the internet. Oh, the internet's down. I can't look at it. I can't, you know, like bring bits and pieces of it into a game or whatever. And I'm like, okay, so where do I download this? And then this, you know, going to GitHub and trying to figure out like, what do I download in order to unzip and then install and then have on like a Java node so that I don't even know these terms really well, but node.js, which is like, you do this with the thing and the other thing. All of this is like black magic to me, but I did actually download Git or whatever the interface is for it and get the repository for it and like have, and this is the bizarre thing, right? At one time I would have spent a bunch of time learning like, what is node.js? How does it work? What are the commands? How is it working in the background? What is it doing? And this time I basically went, oh good. Somebody gave me a series of commands that I can copy and paste. I copied and pasted them and it worked. And I went, good enough. And I walked away.
I need to say something. I'm running interference here. If anybody ever happens to listen to this episode and hears you say some of the things you said, they're going to get mad. And I want to step in and say, I'm pretty sure Telson knows the difference between Java and JavaScript and that they're not related at all, other than they both have Java in their name. So when he's saying Java, he's not actually talking about Java. And he knows that.
Well, vaguely, like I said, most of it was just like, here's a copy and paste thing in order to, you know, yeah. It's like, this is, oh, it's a node. That's a thing. I can name drop a code thing. I'm like, I don't really understand what it's doing, and I don't care. It just works.
So was there a question in there, or was it just the humble brag that you got it going?
It was more or less just the humble brag, but also okay. it was really, it's not even a humble brag. It's more a statement of my current technological prowess, where which is to say, it's not that great. Where at one time it would have been, I'm going to figure out how this works and I'm going to understand it and I'm going to be able to do stuff and people are going to go, wow. And it was literally me looking at it and going, tick, click, okay. And then I push what? Right. Okay. The blue button and then the red button and it works. Stop touching it. Stop touching it.
Tools. illegal operation. No, sir, you haven't done anything wrong. Don't turn it on.
who is General Fault and why is he in my computer?
What I will say, it was easy to be a nerd generalist back in the day. So when were up to date with a lot of this shit and you were dabbling with a lot of this shit, it was so much easier to do that back then. So much of this stuff is specialized. Like you look at, you know, the web world by itself, like there's a huge difference between guys who are doing a lot of JavaScript, like Node.js and React and stuff like that, and guys who spend more time in the PHP trenches, whether they're doing vanilla PHP stuff or whether working with different frameworks. Like it is so drastically different that it is unreasonable for somebody now that even just dabbles a little bit to just walk in and expect to grok any of it without just doing the copy and paste the guide and it either works or it doesn't. So
yeah,
you don't need to feel bad about that.
No. And I don't, I'm a little bit amused by it though, because it very much shows like how much things have changed. It, to put it into perspective for people of our generation, it's kind of like the switch from doing things in like machine language or like in like pre-compiler code or working in, you know, Visual Basic instead of C++ or C before the ++.
I'm pouring my second drink already.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble, people. So there's a major switch. And I do notice this just in like having conversations with you about, you know, things where you're like, you know, something, and you're throwing out words that like, I don't even know what those mean. You know, I know what PHP is, right? Mm-hmm. And I know what JavaScript is, and I know what frameworks are generally, but like, there's all kinds of things where I remember when I was first fiddling around with map tools, and I was asking you some very, very basic questions, and the answers came back in a language that I just couldn't even, I was like, what? Like fucking what? you know, things about like, is it in this or that? And I'm like, I don't even know what those are, man. You may as well be speaking Greek. I have no idea.
This is sort of a early cheating parting gift. Do yourself a favor. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you. I read this about once every week or two just to remind myself how ludicrous the current landscape is. Not even the current. There's an article that is a parody of another article. But the one I want you to read is called, just Google how it feels to learn JavaScript in 2016.
I think I have read that. It's been a while, though.
Yeah. It's on the Hacker Noon site. It was a...
There's so many layers of things now where it's like the abstractions of the abstractions have abstractions in the abstract layer.
Yeah. I try to stay out of that wheelhouse for the most part. We've dabbled with it. And every time we do, it's always like, let's jump in all the way. And it gets pretty ridiculous. But that's also where that, trying to think of another comparison, you run into the attitude of you've always got to do the new cool.
Yes.
With that shit.
Yeah.
You know, where I am very much the web equivalent of like the old COBOL dev that's still getting decently paid jobs working for bank infrastructure and shit like that, you know, because it just works. It just works well. They don't want to break it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like an abacus, right? It's really, really hard to add. And part of it that I have, this really should have gone in last episode too, about gripes. This would have been a really good one. I have a problem with advertising of all kinds. And it's not really so much advertising, but it's the attitude that comes along with the advertising, where a lot of products these days are not actually anything other than a way to incentivize you to part with your money, right? Like there used to be, you know, here are things that you buy and they're good and they work and they do the thing that you need, and you probably need them to do that. Or maybe you don't, but it's a little bit more convenient if you have the thing. And there was snake oil. Mm-hmm. And the ratio has changed to the point where now most things are some kind of snake oil. You need to buy the new iPhone. Do I really? What's changed? Oh, the old one doesn't work anymore because they stopped updating it. It's like, it's basically everything is a subscription, including like your clothing, mm-hmm. right? There's a, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a significant decline in the quality of clothing that you can buy without spending an absolute ton of money. Like there was a time when a good cheap t-shirt, and obviously the prices have gone up because inflation and various things and blah, blah, blah. But it used to be that a cheap t-shirt was functional. And now a cheap t-shirt, you can literally, it's like sheer nylon. You can see through it. It wears out the first time you put it in a washing machine. It's basically disposable. Mm-hmm. The important thing to remember is I had an onion tag in my belt.
Capitalism.
Yeah. Woo! The problem that I have with capitalism, the biggest problem that I have with capitalism, is the race to the bottom. Everyone knows it's happening. No one seems interested in changing it. How do we get off the treadmill? This is a subject for our other podcast, Nerding Under the Influence, The Hard Stuff, where we talk about the serious issues affecting people today. Podcast may or may not exist, void in Oklahoma.
So you wanted to talk about some not serious, gripey,
yes,
complainy stuff. I think you even wanted to talk about video games. So let's get into that.
I used to be an adventurer like you.
Stay a while and listen.
You know what pisses me off about video games?
The way that they eat quarters. You only get 3 lives, and then you got to put another 25 cents in.
No, you had some ideas. You've left me intentionally in the dark about it a little bit. So let's get into that.
Okay, so a little bit. So to let everybody at home know, you know, all 4 of you or 7 or however many there are now, we've not quite joked about how Shane does all of the work and I basically show up. This week, I actually wrote some stuff in the show document, in the show notes, to say this is what I kind of want to talk about. And in my typical fashion, I've done it in chaos and in improvisation mode. So my note is this: let's talk about video games.
Let's talk about what we're reading.
Yeah. So,
you know what, though? You're selling yourself short because I created the doc. I left it completely empty. The only things I've written in it have been responses to the stuff you've written. I don't see the problem here.
I don't think there is a problem. I think that it's a little bit amusing that I wrote it, and it's intentionally kind of vague. So the question I wrote is like, let's talk about video games. What's your favorite video game and why? And it's a difficult question to answer for both of us. We talked about it a bit before the show, but I'll let you go off on a rant first.
Yeah, I'm not going to let it be a rant.
You've had 2 drinks. There's no way you can avoid it.
I don't have a favorite video game. I think that's the thing I just have to be upfront about. I have favorite games, and each of them are favorites for different reasons, but also in different contexts. I don't play a ton of new games. I'm pretty selective about the ones that I do. I certainly played a lot more like just average to even garbage games in the past. But some of those are the ones that I look back at the most fondly. And if you were to just ask me, you know, favorite game of all time, I might answer one of those games, and they would be an objectively terrible game. But because of the context of in which I played the game and enjoyed it, the niche appeal it might have for me, that would be my answer. I would say certainly not the best game. I would never try and convince you it was good necessarily, but my favorite. I think we've talked about it before on the show, the Breath of Fire series. Mm-hmm. And specifically, Breath of Fire 1 and 2 were both released on the Super Nintendo here in North America. Breath of Fire 1 was one that everybody was kind of sour on because there was this idea that we got it instead of what was Final Fantasy 5 or 3 or whichever one was going to become the next US version of Final Fantasy. When that was never the case, like it's a Capcom game that Square dealt with the localization of. And it was your bog standard JRPG of the time. It had some things that it did, I thought, better than a lot of games of that era, but it was unremarkable. The second game did what that game did better, but it is notorious for having one of the worst localizations of all time.
Someone set up us the bomb.
Like, it isn't even, like, meme-worthy in the way that a lot of things from back then were, eh? You know, all your base are belong to us kind of stuff that... Uh-huh. Has survived. It's just bad. It's juvenile. It's just fucking horrible. And I loved every minute of it. Now, I mean, I was a young teenager playing it. That's part of it, right? Like, I was much more tolerant of juvenile things mm-hmm. back then. It was an interesting era in video games, too, because, like, you'd gone from games where there wasn't a lot of reading and stuff that you had to do. You know, you think of the Zelda games, right, as a good example of what came before these. And it's like, yeah, whatever. There's not a lot there. You know, I Am Error is about the only remarkable thing that I remember from, like, Zelda 2, which a lot of people don't like. I love that game. It isn't what Zelda became. You know, I think if they went back to what Zelda 1 was. But Breath of Fire 2, despite its very obvious warts, was the perfect game for me at the time. And I've gone back and played it a few times over the years, I think last year, maybe the year before, most recently. And I can still, for that game, overlook all the things that other games I would go back to and say, you know, oh, it was just nostalgia was the only reason I liked this. And I couldn't overlook its faults now where I would have back in the day. I can still overlook all the faults of this game. It is unremarkable in its overall package. It's a decent JRPG. I think it has some of the best sprite work mm-hmm. of that era. Like, you know, how that shit was done. I would put it miles ahead of even Final Fantasy VI or Chrono Trigger in terms of the visual work on it. It's got some absolute banging music. Despite being an unremarkable JRPG, it had a vision that's uniquely it and a flavor that was uniquely it. Probably doesn't help that, like, it has one of the first games, at least, that was localized in North America that very obviously had a character that was designed specifically to appeal to proto-furries. So right up your alley if you'd have played it back then. Listen, you can just do me a favor now. You're sitting in front of a computer. Open up a new tab. Google Breath of Fire 2 cat with a K. Double T's.
Double T's, yep. Oh my god. Yeah, that's not a... Oh, hey, look, there's a whole bunch of stuff from DeviantArt.
Yeah.
Some of it's deviant.
I'm not the only person that really enjoyed this game, though, and I have to say... So much of it was up to the imagination, right? Because you get what would be the art in the book and on the cover. Right. And then you look at Kat in the game and she's like, oh, she doesn't look anything like that. Still looks cool. She looks different. But, you know, you're not going to ogle over something that is, you know, if you count the number of pixels in the sprites and the way it's presented most of the time, like 60 pixels max.
Listen, it's a challenging wank, but challenge accepted.
That'd be my most obvious answer to favorite game ever.
That's a detailed and in-depth answer. I feel like I should have gone first.
Yeah, because you got Wikipedia open. You got a whole list again.
No, because my answers are much, much simpler and sort of surface level, I think. I have to give, and I have a similar thing. It's really difficult to sort of point out one game. I mean, if I went by hours played, I have to give it to EverQuest. Mm-hmm. Because for were just hours in game, because there's you can actually keep track of that, like it's on the server. When did you log in? When did you log out? I had just shy, I think, of 2 years of actual time played.
Was that your first account?
No.
Because you were playing on like private servers back in the day too, weren't you?
Not very much. A little. I played Project EQ a little bit, which is an attempt to go back to what it was in 1999, because it changed. Like the character of the game changed significantly over time. But my original account, I probably had like 30 or 40 hours on. So it really wasn't, it is my second account. It was originally signed up for it in 2001. I stopped playing last year. So that's basically like 22 years. And I had 2 years worth of playtime. Like that's 10% of my life over those 20 years. Like it's a significant amount of time. And it was like the reason that it is so engaging is because even though the game, especially now, right, like that we have like digital mining and everybody's figured out exactly where everything is, exactly how everything works. I think there's like two mysteries left in the game that nobody has ever figured out. And it's largely because one of them, and the devs have sort of come out and said, one of them is like there's a NPC who spawns once every between 72 and 100,052 hours of the server being up, walks 10 steps and is immediately killed. And I don't think anyone's ever actually interacted with that NPC. And there's one other one that I can't remember. But the game is very well mapped, but it still feels like there's endless possibilities. Right. There's like after 20 years, there were little corners of the game where I'd go and go, I've never been here before. Right. So it was just huge and it felt unexplored.
I could probably say similar for the amount of World of Warcraft time that I put in over the years. I don't think it would, be quite as much as the time you've spent in EverQuest. But when I look back at my time in WoW, there's a question that I have to ask with that I don't have to ask with most other games. How much of what you revere and look fondly back about those games was the game, and how much of it was the community that was part of that game?
It's a valid question, and that's one of the things that like I've got to bring up, is that I played the game. In the early days, I played with some friends that it was not as pleasant, because they all took it way more seriously than I do. I was in college at the time. So they took it like super seriously. We were playing like 4, 6, 8 hours a day. And I was like, I can log in for 2 hours a week. Can you guys like kind of wait for me or kind of help me along? And their answer was more or less, nope.
Get good scrub.
Pretty much. And I mean, like EverQuest is a game that really rewards time spent. Like there was one particular, this time around, I had a good group of folks to play with, and I played like over two progression servers with them. And there was one particular thing that I wanted, because there's an illusion mask that comes from one boss in one location who has like a 10% chance to spawn and has like a 2% chance to drop the thing. Mm-hmm. And I spent 120 hours camping that one thing. It was literally, I'm parked here, but I got to kill 6 things, right? There's a 20-minute respawn timer. You kill number one and number two. Kill number three and number four, you kill number five, and then the placeholder for the boss. And then I go do something else for a few minutes. And then I kill them all again, and I kill them all again, and the boss spawns, and I kill the boss, and he doesn't drop the thing, right? So like there's some amount of just like mindless grinding, which is actually a thing that I kind of enjoyed about EverQuest. It's one of the things I didn't enjoy so much about WoW is like the difference in the way that the dungeons happen. Right. Mm-hmm. Like in WoW, it felt to me, follow the tank. Okay. So the tank knows where he's going. I just follow the tank and like, I don't know, throw out fireballs or heals or whatever it is that I do. And now we're done. Okay. And now what?
That was certainly true of what WoW became. Now I know that your EQ guild went and played some of the WoW classic stuff.
Yeah. It didn't feel that much difference.
Did you do like even heroic dungeons and stuff through Burning Crusade?
No, because we only had like original WoW.
Okay.
Right. The way that EQ worked was is that you picked a spot, Mm-hmm. And someone went out and poked a monster and ran back to camp, and then you'd kill the monster. And then they go out and poke another monster. And if you were being efficient about it, like while that monster was dying, they were going out to poke another one. So it was just a steady stream of stuff coming in. It was literally grinding, right? Yeah. Like you lure monsters into this treadmill of death, basically, or like into the wood chipper. And it sounds boring. But the whole point of that, and this is where the community comes in, is who are you spending this time with? Mm-hmm. Right? I have you've met two of them. Chris and Rich that we play D&D with on Sundays were part of the little crew that I did that with. And it was just, it was an excuse to hang out with your friends. Mm-hmm. I've actually talked about this more than I was expecting to, because it was basically like EverQuest MMO people. The game itself, though, had some appeal because it there's a little bit of the slot machine mechanic, right? Pull the lever and see what you get, right? The Diablo style loot simulator. Mm-hmm. But some of it too was like, okay, well, I've got like these six monsters all together and mobs, to give them their vernacular. And we can't handle six. So what do we do? Right. And depending on the characters that you've brought, you have a different tool set to handle that. Sometimes it's bring them all in and we can kill them all at once. It's risky, but we can do it. Or it's like, all right, like distract them or send them away or whatever.
And I can relate to that in that, like, my heyday of WoW was Burning Crusade. I played Burning Crusade when it was new, and then I continued to play Burning Crusade on private servers until Cataclysm came out on retail. And the difficulty ramp for Burning Crusade was much closer to EverQuest. And because of the different difficulty levels of everything from dungeons, heroic dungeons, and then your raids, it would scale up. So heroic dungeons, which are, you hit level cap, it's basically the first thing you're running into. It was very much a, like, we have to be strategic. Okay, it's not just about the tank going and you following. I need somebody who can do some CC over there. We need to make decisions based on our composition. Well, what crowd control is happening? How are we going to deal with these? Because if we just pull, everybody's going to die. What's backwards for me, though, is the community that I played with back in the day is the community I look back farther. Part of the reason I got out of World of Warcraft is that people grew up. And the new community coming in, I'm going to stereotype some people here, but the community that came in was some of the younger, almost like the console generation of gamers, and they were never the same.
They treat it, I find that, especially because a lot of the people that I played with when I came back to EverQuest were not young, but younger, right? Like most of the people that I was playing with were in their 20s and 30s, and I was in my mid-40s, right? And they treat it much more like a game, right? Like there was a very, very big focus on, well, the devs back in the day didn't understand itemization. And, I wanted to poke them and go, yeah, they did, but they weren't interested in you optimizing every DPS number, mm-hmm. right? Like, yes, the tanks need like some strength and some, for damage, and they need, like a whole bunch of constitution for hit points. They need a whole bunch of AC to avoid hits. Yes, they understood that and they gave you that gear, but they also had tank specific gear for wisdom and intelligence and for dexterity. Because it was intended as a role-playing game, which nobody ever did, really. Mm-hmm. Right? WoW had a much bigger community for that than EverQuest ever did. It was intended that like your warrior, who was like the tank, wasn't just, I am the tank, that is what I do. They were also intended to be, this is my avatar in this world, and I'm going to like be a blacksmith or a baker. Or, I'm going to do tailoring, or I'm going to go around and try and convince people of things. I need my charisma to be a little higher so that the ratio of stuff that I sell and buy from merchants is a little better. Like all of those things were also available. Nobody does that anymore. And now it's all about optimizing how fast can I kill boss, get loot, move on. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like that's perfectly fine. It's a game. It has evolved. No,
and I think that used to work okay. Like you could either choose to be a part of the communities back in the day or that couldn't. And where WoW really lost me was when all the cross-server, cross-realm stuff started to happen. So it was...
There is no community.
Reputation used to matter. Like on a server, on a realm, a reputation used to matter. If you were going to be a dick, people would remember you. They would remember your name. You couldn't just level a new character in 2 days and get around it. You would not be invited to participate in stuff.
Yeah.
you would be actively shunned. Shame, ding, shame, ding. Once you got all the cross-realm stuff happening, it became like the rest of the internet and all the shit that comes with anonymity, right?
Uh-huh.
And that really ruined WoW for me. Now, it was smart that they did it. I understand that the game as it became is much more accessible than the game I used to play. What World of Warcraft became is more of a game for everyone, but for me, it became less of a game for me.
Yeah, and there's a few, like EverQuest is very much a niche game now. It was a little bit of a niche game then, but I mean, it's very much a niche game now because I tried to get you into it once and you took one look at the UI and went, hard no, I'm out.
You know what? It wasn't the UI because I had played like EQ99. I fired it up for a little while back in the day. It was the combination of the UI, but it was honestly the movement of the characters that really did it.
There's a weird thing that there is a schism, if you will. Someone nailed a proclamation to a church wall at some point. There's the old graphics, which are the ones that came out in 1999, which some people absolutely love. And they were very much a product of running an MMO on a tank simulator, which is what the engine for EverQuest is. In 1999, like it was like square faces, like it looked like Minecraft.
But also the UI, the way it was windowed and stuff in EQ99 felt more like playing a
Bard's Tale.
Like a DOS-based dungeon crawl game kind of thing, right?
Would you like an interesting technical nerdy trivia fact about that UI? That whole thing where like your viewport is in the middle. And then all that stuff around the outside, like if it was a modern game, all that stuff around the outside would be more or less static graphics and the one in the middle would be animated. They actually animated the whole screen. Like everything was it was horribly, horribly inefficient. Like it was incredible. Anyway, so there's a big schism. Like I like the new graphics and that puts me in a really small minority of people. Most people love the old graphics because they were just... they were very much avatars. No one was interested in making it look like real people, right? There were no facial expressions, really. It was like, here's a painted mask that's going on a square block. It looks vaguely human. Good enough. And they spent a fair bit of time trying to figure out the animation. So you might actually appreciate the older graphics a little bit more. I'm not going to try and get you to play because then I would be tempted to play and I don't want to do that. I have too many other video games I want to play. But the new graphics, one of the major complaints that people have about them is that the animations don't look right. And they're not wrong. Like I like the older animations better. I wish that we could have new models, which are like more pixels basically. And they're less tessellated. Mm-hmm. So I prefer them, but anyway.
That's a transition that I do think World of Warcraft did well. Mm-hmm. Is they made improvements design-wise. Like they even re-rigged all the characters and everything come Cataclysm.
They did it right, though. It's more stylized than realistic.
It is more stylized. It sort of maintained the spirit of the original vision, but they also did it in a way where it's like, we're not doing it to look ultra-realistic. We're doing it to create a look that's more timeless.
Yeah.
You know, what we had was reasonably timeless, and that's part of the success that they had long-term, I think. Let's lean into that even harder, get less realistic, maybe a little more cartoony, but it ages so much better.
It does. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an awful lot. Like, do you remember Conan the Barbarian, the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched it recently?
No, it's been a very long time.
So a lot of the visuals really don't stand up well against modern movies. Reasonably well for the consideration that it's 40 years old now. But the music stands up really well, and it's Baroque music by Basil Polidorus, and I know that because I actually went out and bought the soundtrack. I liked it so much. But the director originally wanted to do like contemporary rock music, mm-hmm. which would have been fine, but if you went back and watched it now, you'd hear that music and go, oh my god, this is a movie from the 70s,
mm-hmm.
right? And it just wouldn't stand up. And it's exactly the same thing. It's if you try and put things to like haircuts make things stand out, you know, like, you know, here's a 1965 Buick in the background. Like, we know where and when this is, right? As opposed to, here's something that you really can't place. Right. So that's an awful lot of talk about favorite video games. I do want to actually record a second episode today. So I would like to say the other thing that I wanted to do about video games is this is the thing that I left you in the dark about, and I did it kind of on purpose. So we've talked a little bit about doing like a video game stream, and I don't necessarily want to try doing that again because it's a bunch of time to set up. We're both busy. We don't have time at the same time to set that up and do it, unless somebody wants to sponsor us for $1 billion, in which case we'll just go do it, right? But I would like to, and this is similar to the book report thing that I would like to do. I would like us to play a game. It doesn't have to be the same game. It could be two different games. And then, like, when we get together, talk about what happened and why it matters.
So Fallout 2 then?
No, definitely not Fallout 2. Good God. I'll tell you what I want to do, right? And there's some time travel that would have to be involved for me to do this in a timely fashion. But I am actually in Baldur's Gate 3. I have actually finished Act 2 in honor mode, which is an accomplishment, especially since I almost got killed by the Emperor at the end of Act 2. Right? Because I'm playing as a Githyanki, and there's a Githyanki response, which is basically like, no, you're a mind flayer, I can't help you. And it's like, I can't not select that. Like, oh no, now everybody's aggro. But once I'm finished with Baldur's Gate 3, right, we're going to almost be at the point where we're into Horizon Forbidden West, which you're probably going to be into like really shortly.
I was going to say, I'll be done that game and moved on before you're even partway through Act 3.
And that's fine. That's fine. Because I'm a month away from playing anyway. But I was thinking, like, here's what I want to do. I want to play through Zero Dawn again so that I'm familiarized with the story. Mm-hmm. I'll probably go through and play it on story mode just so that I can hit the high points. I want to play Forbidden West. And after I'm finished Baldur's Gate 3, I want to go back and actually finish Baldur's Gate 1 and 2.
Ooh, so you do want to play Fallout 1 and 2, basically.
Basically, because the story for Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 are really good. And they were honestly like really, really great games for the time.
They were.
And I just didn't give, I didn't have the time and the focus to actually give them a good.
I think I could do Baldur's Gate 2. I'm pretty sure I could make it through Icewind Dale. I don't know if I'd be able to get into the first Baldur's Gate. I would give it a shot. Yeah.
No, and that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that, like, I would bring something to the table where I say, okay, so I'm playing Baldur's Gate 1, and this is where I got to this week, and this is what I noticed, and these are some comments that I have. And then whatever game you happen to be playing, you would also have something to say about. Right? And maybe like, because I know for the last couple of weeks, as I mentioned, I've been working a lot of overtime, so I didn't get a chance to play very much. Like, if we were to do it right now about Baldur's Gate 3, my comment would be, yeah, I did the sort of end of Act 2 sort of dialogue-y scenes. Nothing much to talk about there. Shadowheart's got white hair now. That's pretty much the change there. Yeah. So, and that might be the case, but I thought it would be sort of neat to talk about. Here's where because I would like to play Icewind Dale as well. I've never finished that. I've got Neverwinter Nights 1 that I've never finished. Neverwinter Nights 2.
That'd be a game I'd like to revisit.
Well, I mean, we could play through Neverwinter Nights 1. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. There would definitely be some, I don't want to say beef, but there'd be definitely some things to sort out.
I honestly don't think we should try and play it multiplayer. I think that's a game we should both play single player and then talk about our experiences with.
Okay, and I'm cool with that. I'm totally dead. And that's really what I wanted to set up. So,
yeah, I'm game. You know, the next couple months are going to be a bit hairy, getting used to the transition to working from home full time and a few other things that I have going on, but I do want to need to make more time for video games. I've played, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half of Cyberpunk expansion in like 8 weeks, 9 weeks, and haven't touched a single other game besides it?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, it's the kind of thing I think that would give us a little bit of a nudge to go, oh, okay, well, I'll put an hour or two in just so I have something to talk about.
Yeah.
So might be worth our time. So I'm at the bottom of a can of beer and I need to return it. We should wrap up episode one for this evening, I think. How do you feel about that?
I feel all right.
And now I really have to pee.